Welcome into another edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity for Thursday, the 17th day of September 2020. Good to have you along. Thanks for joining the fun. Hope you and yours are doing well today. And that if you're anywhere on the Gulf Coast, I hope you're drying out or trying to. Tough times on the Gulf Coast, I tell you. I saw this morning that Pensacola got 18.7 inches of rain during the hurricane landfall. That's an amazing amount of rain. My cousin Sean, who lives around Pensacola, posted that he, at his home, has gotten over 13 inches of rain. This is one of the big things about hurricanes. They dump a lot of water. A lot. And the wind damage and the high water, the storm surge, those are different things. But the amount of rain, you combine the amount of rain with the flooding coming in just from the storm surge, and it's amazing. The power of it all and the destruction of it all is just incredible. Our prayers go out for those folks down there. Lots of folks working to try to restore things. Lots of stuff going on. I mean, have you seen the pictures? There's a picture, I don't know what I did with it now. Is it over here? I don't know. Anyway, there's a picture. I have seen it on both Facebook and Twitter of a rather large boat. Looks like a 45-footer, a fishing boat, sitting on the side of the road where it has floated in from somewhere when the water was high and the wind was blowing. It's just sitting there out of water now. It's just amazing. And seeing that reminded me of a story my dad used to tell, because he worked an oil rig in the Gulf Coast back in his college days. In the summers, he'd go down and work on this oil rig. And he told me one time about going back to the oil rig after a huge hurricane once way back then. This would have been back in the 50s sometimes. And seeing boats in the trees near the Gulf Coast. Just amazing. Hurricanes. So remember the folks on the Gulf Coast, not a good time for them right now. But how about you? You doing okay? I hope you're fine. Things are things never have gotten really as wet here as I expected them to be. I thought we would get covered up. I thought we would be wet. I saw some drizzle yesterday. That was about it. As I was out running around yesterday, just a bit of drizzle. And it has been windy, it has been overcast. But other than that, we haven't seen too much. Not much at all. So we've sort of dodged the bullet here. It looked for a little while like we were going to get some of that outer band stuff pounding on us, but it just didn't happen. So we can count that as good fortune for us, I guess. A good blessing, I guess. It is, it's an interesting day in the neighborhood. There's some bizarre stuff going on, and I have a couple of stories. I like to start with absurdity if I can, and this story falls in the absurd category, definitely. It really does. It should not be at all surprising, and it probably will not be at all surprising to you if you are aware of how progressives think and you realize that they are disconnected from the fundamentals of reality. City council members in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you remember 2 months ago, they moved to eliminate their police department. Not just defund the police department, but eliminate it. And they wanted to get rid of it. They're good progressives. They adhere to progressive ideology, and they believe that the police department is a hindrance to the peace of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Side note, if you live in Minneapolis, you should move, because these people are insane. They are deeply disconnected from the real world. Well, the Minneapolis City Council sounded the alarm during a meeting yesterday because there's a surge in crime. Their constituents are calling them. Hey, what's up? Lots of crime here. Council members pressed Police Chief Madaria Arredondo about the uptick in crimes that included daylight carjackings, robberies, assaults, shootings, street racing. Council member Jamal Osman, noting that constituents' calls to the Minneapolis Police Department have gone unanswered, said, residents are asking, where are the police? That's the only public safety option they have at the moment. MPD, they rely on MPD. And they're saying they're nowhere to be seen. Council President Lisa Bender accused police of intentionally not enforcing laws or making arrests. She said, this is not new, but it's very concerning in the current context. Arredondo, who has served as police chief since 2017, called her comments troubling to hear and pledged to address the issue with departmental supervisors. He said, we need to make sure that our communities know that we're going to be there, that we're going to be responsive. We've taken an oath to do that. The Minneapolis Police Department's crime data shows a rise in assaults, robberies, homicides, property crimes, and arson. According to Minnesota Public Radio, more people have been killed in the city in the first 9 months of 2020 than slain all of last year. Arredondo said about 100 officers have left the department or have taken a leave of absence since the start of the year, which is more than double the typical number of officers who either step down from the department or are inactive during a year. In July, the council took several steps toward dismantling the city's police department, including approving an amendment to remove $1 million from the police department and reallocate it towards the health department to hire violence interrupters. Yes, that is a term, violence interrupters, who are intended to defuse potentially violent situations. Social workers. That's what that translates to. The council had pledged earlier in the summer to dismantle the police department and replace it with a community-based system of public safety. Good progressive people who give everybody flowers. The council began focusing on police reforms after George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man, died after a white Minneapolis police officer knelt on his neck for close to 9 minutes. Yada, yada, yada. He died while in police custody. The coroner's report says it wasn't because anybody's knee was on his neck. The progressives are confused. They're perplexed. They don't understand. How could there be an increase in crime? Well, I'll tell you how. You have very publicly paraded out your progressive pride, and you have promised the people, like good progressives who know everything and are better than everybody else, you're intellectually and morally superior to the rank and file, to the dirty, unwashed masses. You've assured them that you're going to get rid of this problem caused by the police department. And the criminal element in your city has said, woo-hoo, let's party. They have realized that they're not going to be resisted. The odds of them being arrested for committing the crimes that they would normally commit under the cover of darkness have just about disappeared, so they're doing it in the daytime now. And they're not afraid of the consequences of their actions, so they just do it anytime they want. This is the result of not having a good police department in place. The deterrence isn't there. You don't deter crime by saying, oh, we're going to be more sensitive. You deter a crime by swiftly pouncing on crime when it happens and swiftly dealing with those who commit crime as the law allows. That is how you deter crime. The progressives are lying to the people of Minneapolis. And as a result, the people of Minneapolis are suffering. The people of Minneapolis need to wise up. They need to realize that the reason Minneapolis is being torn apart by the criminal element today is because they've elected a bunch of idiots to office. People who are professional politicians, who know how to speak the lingo, who know how to look the way they should on camera, who know how to make a speech, and know how to make the promises which will get them elected and reelected. But they don't know how to do the job of actually governing, of actually keeping the peace and protecting the people. Because their brains aren't wired that way. They don't see the world through the lens of reality. They see the world through the lens of progressive theory. A theory which has never proven itself functional in real life. So, Minneapolis, it's time to eliminate the progressives who are destroying your city, and elect some people who understand what law and order is really about, and rescue your city from the outcome which is bound to happen. Bound to happen. If you don't. It's absurd that this is happening. But we're watching absurdity happen everywhere progressives are in charge. And it's because progressives are not rooted in the real world. They have a theory which has never worked. But doggone it, they're going to keep working on it until it either works or everybody who objects is dead. And one of the chief fundraisers or funders of progressive theory and application in America is a guy by the name of George Soros. If you've been someone who follows the news and understands his involvement in funding things like Antifa and Black Lives Matter, you understand and you know who George Soros is. Well, yesterday, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich was a guest on the Fox News show Outnumbered, discussing the costs of recent riots. When Gingrich brought up the fact that George Soros funds races for left-leaning district attorneys who are releasing criminals back onto the streets, he was told, A, that George Soros did not fund their races, and B, there was no reason to bring him up. And fortunately, we just happen to have the audio.
Whose lives have been destroyed by this violence.
Yeah, it's so true. They represent everybody, Harris. Right? Speaker Gingrich, I know you have a final thought for us.
Yeah, look, the number one problem in almost all these cities is George Soros elected left-wing, anti-police, pro-criminal district attorneys who refuse to keep people locked up. Just yesterday, they put somebody back on the street who's wanted for two different murders in New York City. You cannot solve this problem. And both Harris and Biden have talked very proudly about what they call progressive district attorneys. Progressive district attorneys are anti-police, pro-criminal, and overwhelmingly elected with George Soros' money. And they're a major cause of the violence we're seeing because they keep putting the violent criminals back on the street.
I'm not sure we need to bring George Soros into this.
I was going to say you'd get the last word, Speaker.
He paid for it. I mean, why can't we discuss the fact that millions of dollars he spent?
I agree with Melissa. George Soros doesn't need to be a part of this conversation.
Okay.
Awkward silence.
So it's verboten.
All right. We're going to. Okay, we're going to move on.
That
historic
awkward,
day at the White House.
That awkward
we covered
silence
it from stem
was
to stem.
Actually part of the conversation. It actually happened. It wasn't inserted. It wasn't an edit. That awkward silence was Newt Gingrich waiting for a response from the hosts, and the hosts sitting and listening to what was being said to them in their earpieces before they spoke again. As the producer of the segment told them what they could and could not say. A very interesting and telling moment. George Soros has been funding campaigns for district attorneys and secretaries of state in each state and other people as well. Been funding campaigns state by state across America on the local level. Because the local level is where things happen. We're seeing this happen in progressive cities right now. Places like Minneapolis, we just talked about. Portland, Oregon. Seattle, Washington. Chicago, Illinois. On the local level, the state and local level, the officials in office determine what happens in your city, in your state. And if progressives are running those offices on the state and local level, they're going to institute progressive policies, and everything is going to crumble around you. This is just part of how progressives hope to change the landscape of America, to fundamentally transform this nation into what they believe it should be. And it's not a place you want to live. It's the Thursday, September 17th version of the Daily Perspective podcast. I was just looking at how I program things, how I program the bumper rotations and such for the show, and I'm trying to figure out why it's playing the same ones over and over again. I guess it got tired of the classic rock oldies and just wants to play all this stuff now. My computer apparently has its own musical taste. There will be a conversation after the show. It is the Thursday edition of the podcast. Good to have you along. The weekend is right around the corner. This weekend, my wife and I will be hitting the road. We've got an overnight trip, going to Jonesboro, Arkansas, to visit with a relative, a nephew, and his wife, and we're going to deliver some furniture. Yeah, we found a table. They needed a kitchen table, and we found something. We're going to take it to them, and so that'll be an interesting trip. I don't know if there'll be anything to report from it, but I've been to Arkansas. I've been to Arkansas a couple of times. I've done the drive. The last time was to Jonesboro for their wedding, actually. And I did not know how much rice is grown in Arkansas. We passed by miles and miles and miles of rice fields. Interesting. So if you live in Arkansas, konnichiwa. It's a Thursday edition of the podcast, and there's weird stuff happening everywhere. Weird stuff happening really closer to me than Jonesboro, Arkansas. Actually, it's just a couple of hours north of where I live, Nashville, Tennessee. Nash Vegas, where the music business and tourism keeps the city alive. And over on Lower Broadway in Nashville, there's all kinds of clubs. Clubs, bars, things like that. It is the nightlife of Nashville, Tennessee, and it's the honky tonks of places people go to and to enjoy enjoy the country music and just to party. That's all been suffering because of what's happening with the coronavirus. And there's a story coming out of Nashville right now that it looks like there's been some funny business going on with reporting of coronavirus case numbers on Lower Broadway. It looks like the case numbers may have been so low, the mayor's office and the Metro Health Department there decided, hey, we don't need to share that with anybody. The numbers don't jive with everything they're telling the people. Emails between the mayor's senior advisor and the health department reveal only a partial picture, but what they reveal is disturbing. The discussion involves the low number of coronavirus cases emerging from bars and restaurants and how to handle that. And most disturbingly, how to keep it from the public. On the 30th of June, contact tracing was given a small view of coronavirus clusters. Construction and nursing homes were found to be causing problems with more than 1,000 cases traced to each of those categories, but bars and restaurants reported just 22 cases. 22 cases as opposed to the more than 1,000 coming out of construction and nursing homes. Leslie Waller from the health department asks, this isn't going to be publicly released, right? Just for the mayor's office? A senior advisor, Benjamin Eagles, writes back, correct, not for public consumption. A month later, the health department was asked point blank about the rumor that there are only 80 cases traced to bars and restaurants. Reporter Nate Rao asks, the figure you gave of more than 80 does lead to a natural question. If there have been over 20,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Davidson and only 80 or so are traced to restaurants and bars, doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem? Brian Todd, health department official, asked 5 health department officials, please advise how you recommend I respond. The name at the top of the response is clipped off, but you can find the answer unacceptable anyway. My 2 cents? We've certainly refused to give counts per bar because those numbers are low per site. We could still release the total, though, and then a response to the over 80 could be because that number is increasing all the time and we don't want to say a specific number. So you see, they actually are acknowledging to each other behind the scenes, the numbers are very, very low, but we've got to spin this so that people are still scared. Oh, those numbers are going up all the time. We can't keep track of it, so we can't give you a specific number, but they're on the rise. That's something you've heard, right? You have heard that coming from progressive politicians. You have heard that from various people in the news. You have heard that from the, let me air quote, experts about COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Neither the health department nor the mayor's office would confirm the authenticity of the emails, but Councilmember Steve Glover had a Metro staff attorney inquire, and we have the official answer. Quote, I was able to get verification from the mayor's office and the Department of Health that these emails are real. Glover says this is Metro Nashville orchestrating a cover-up. He said they are fabricating information. They've blown their entire credibility. It's gone. I don't trust a thing they say going forward. Nothing. Glover says he's been contacted by an endless stream of downtown bartenders, waitresses, and restaurant owners asking why would officials not release these numbers. He says, we've raised taxes 34% and put hundreds, literally thousands of people out of work that are now worried about losing their homes, their apartments, and we did it on bogus data. That should be illegal. Now, Fox 17 News, this is where this is coming from, by the way, wasn't told by the mayor's office this wasn't true. They were told to file a Freedom of Information Act request, which allows us now to ask the question, why are you keeping this from us? Why would you even want to? It's just the real numbers, and what could possibly be an honorable motive? There is no honorable motive. There is none. This is politicians managing a contradiction to their claims. This is politicians having to brush something under the sofa to keep people from seeing it because it contradicts the lies they're telling everybody. We can look back, you know, hindsight being 2020, and we can see where the coronavirus spread the worst. And we can see the mistakes made by government people, politicians, trying to manage a crisis. And we can see they made a lot of mistakes. Just think of New York. What happened with all of those people who were infected being sent back into nursing homes? And the nursing home saying, no, 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 we can't do this. You're going to expose our people. And they were forced to take these infected people. And as a result, thousands upon thousands of senior citizens caught the coronavirus. And they are the category of people who are at the highest risk. And as a result of a government decision and the government ignoring what these people knew to be true, and making them take in these contagious patients. As a result, thousands of people died. Thousands upon thousands of senior citizens died because of gross government mishandling of a situation. And here in Nashville, we see another situation where we see confirmation in the senior citizen population and in construction. There are lots of numbers, and that's something we've seen nationwide. But in bars and restaurants, no, we're not seeing big numbers. And in cities around America, like New York, they're still keeping people from opening bars and restaurants, claiming that they could be hotspots for the spread of COVID-19. They're ignoring the facts, which we've learned over the last 6 months. They're ignoring the fact that it doesn't spread the way they originally told us that it did spread. They're ignoring the fact that, and I have to laugh about this, that for some reason, wearing a mask from the front door to your table and then not wearing a mask while you're stuffing food in your face and then putting the mask back on again as you leave the restaurant is somehow they're ignoring the fact that that is a lot like having a peeing section in a pool. You have a restaurant full of people sitting at tables with their mouths open, having conversations, talking to each other, spreading whatever they may have. But for some reason, wearing that mask for a couple of minutes on the way in and for a few seconds on the way out corrects all that. We watch this happen all over America, except in New York, where they won't let anybody open up, and other cities controlled by hard-nosed leftists who refuse to embrace reality and be honest with their people. And it's very sad to see that attitude in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, there's a lot of people moving out of California heading to Nashville right now. Joe Rogan, he and his podcast, I've heard that they're moving to Nashville. I know that the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro and his bunch, they're moving to Nashville. Hopefully people moving out of California because they're sick of what's happening and their progressive control will move into Nashville and become politically active and correct the problems that are happening there now. Or at least expose the reality of what's happening in Nashville. Otherwise, Nashville will go the way of New York and Los Angeles. And that, my friend, is a shame. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. I need to say happy anniversary. It's the 6-month anniversary of 2 weeks to stop the spread. Show of hands, how many knew the moment you heard, 2 weeks to stop the spread, that it wouldn't be 2 weeks? Yeah, I see all those hands. You're smart people. Scanning Twitter, I just saw a post from Will Witt. This is from last night. He says, I just saw a couple get on my plane in full trash bags, face shields, gloves, and 2 masks. Wonder who they're voting for. Another one of my favorites is, I know somewhere, someone is taking a shower wearing a mask. It is a Thursday edition of the podcast, and coronavirus is serious business. We can laugh. We have to laugh. Absurdity is what kind of keeps things rolling for me, because the absurdity of life, you can either get upset about it and get an ulcer, or you can just laugh at it because it's absurd. Appreciate it for what it is. Don't let it ruin your day. I mean, it's up to you. If you get offended, guess whose fault that is? It's your fault. Well, now, Yelp, you know Yelp, that place that lets you rant and rave about the restaurant you didn't like? And and other places. I get tickled with reviews on Yelp. I think, and we have seen, there have been campaigns. If somebody finds out that the politics of an owner or an employee at a particular restaurant goes against the grain of what they like, they'll get on Yelp and get all their friends to get on Yelp, and they'll start a campaign to destroy the business by putting negative reviews on Yelp. And that's just ridiculous. Cancel culture is a cancer. It is. That's just all it is. But Yelp does track things, and we can look at Yelp and see trends in their tracking. Well, yesterday they released their latest economic impact report revealing business closures across the United States are on the increase as a result of the coronavirus pandemic's economic toll. As of August 31st, 163,735 businesses have indicated on Yelp that they have closed. That's down from the 180,000 that closed at the very beginning of the pandemic. However, it actually shows a 23% increase in the number of closures since mid-July. In addition to monitoring closed businesses, Yelp also takes into account the businesses whose closures have become permanent. That number has steadily increased throughout the past 6 months, now reaching 97,900 and 66 businesses. That represents 60% of closed businesses that won't be reopening. Think about that. As you cruise around your area and you see places that are just closed up because they can't do business right now, 60% of all those closed up businesses won't be opening back up again. Justin Norman, the vice president of data science at Yelp, told CNBC, overall, Yelp's data shows that business closures have continued to rise with a 34% increase in permanent closures since our last report in mid-July. Yelp's September report marks 6 months since March 1st, the date that the company considers to be the beginning of the business crisis. In order to gather closure data, Yelp monitors changes in business hours or descriptions on its app, offering an immediate localized view of the impact of the pandemic that it's had on small businesses. Despite the hard hit small businesses have certainly taken, Norman says, we've seen that home, local, professional, and automotive services have been able to withstand the effects of the pandemic better than other industries. The data supports the trend that most consumers are choosing to stay home over patronizing establishments physically, as home and professional services such as landscapers, contractors, and lawyers see a much lower closure rate than clothing stores and even home decor businesses. Auto and towing services also reported a relatively low closure rate. Now, those all make sense, don't they? Because consumers still need those services. There has been a rise of virtual consultations, contactless or socially distant services. These kind of businesses have proven to be resilient. And I think you've probably seen that as well. I actually had a doctor's appointment that way. I think I told you about it. The last follow-up on my knee surgery, my right knee. It was done via FaceTime. And so people are adapting that way. And in that sense, those services, they're being resilient. And that's good. But the total average is just crazy. Throughout the past 6 months, restaurants, bars, and nightlife venues have been hit the hardest by the restrictions. 32,109 restaurants have closed as of August 31st. The number of restaurants forced to permanently close is slightly above Yelp's total average. That is 61%. 61% forced to permanently close. Because in some areas, such as New York, progressive government is prohibiting the opening of these restaurants. And now we're seeing in Nashville, on Broadway, the city is saying, no, you can't open back up, even though the number of cases that have been directly traced back to that kind of business in Nashville is only around 80, where there have been thousands in other businesses. Restaurants are suffering and suffering badly. And political politicians are deaf to the concerns of these people. It's really sad. Bars and nightlife venues, a huge impact from the pandemic. And that's because they can't really easily adapt and do takeout like a restaurant can, or outdoor dining. A lot of restaurants have expanded their dining to the sidewalks outside. I was watching a video of some folks in the Los Angeles area who they were actually doing a tech review, and they stopped for lunch, and they're sitting on the sidewalk with cars passing by just 3 feet away from them. It's noisy, it's dirty, a lot of stuff being blown around, but that's the answer. They can't bring them inside because, oh no, they're in that enclosed area, but they'll put them outside on the sidewalk. But bars and clubs can't do that because their venues indoors, their speaker systems, their performance areas, all of that other stuff, it's all inside. They can't do takeout and can't put people on the sidewalk. That is a 6 times smaller sector than restaurants. 6,451 venues have closed up. Permanent closure has increased 10% since July. 54% gone. gone. Retail saw a similar increase in permanent closures since July. It rose 10% to a total of 58% in indicated permanent. 58%, almost 60% out of just over 30,000 closed retail businesses. So a little over 15,000 or 15 to 16,000 or more permanently closed. We're celebrating 6 months of 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And as a result, businesses, small businesses across America are being literally devastated. It's different from state to state, and that just makes sense. Looking at closure rates per thousand for each state, Hawaii has been hit the hardest, followed by California, then Nevada, Arizona, Washington State. Hawaii's unemployment rate sat at 13% in July. The state also relies heavily on tourism. Governor Ije has just announced yesterday in Hawaii that they're going to allow people to come there if they've had a negative coronavirus test within 72 hours before they arrive. But at the same time, he's also saying that you can come, you can stay in a resort, but we're going to put an ankle bracelet on you and make sure you don't go anywhere you're not supposed to go. Gee, thanks for the freedom, Governor EJ. The governor of Hawaii has literally put a gun to its head and is pulling the trigger. He's killing the state. He's killing the state. It's just crazy. Closures are higher and businesses are not faring well in large cities. Smaller cities, they're more forgiving to small businesses. L.A. and New York report the highest number of closures. L.A. has seen 15,000. Half of those will be permanent. New York has seen more than 11,000. 63% of that 11,000 permanent closures. It's just crazy. And now the Yelp data is the Main Street is feeling the, it says that Main Street is really feeling the economic impact of the pandemic. And many states and areas of business may not see a recovery soon. And this is why it's so important for us to get back on our track. It's so important for us to get past the panic of the coronavirus. We need to be aware that people have lost their jobs because of bad political decisions, of bad management decisions by progressive politicians. We need to realize that it's doing serious, permanent damage to a lot of businesses, and that damage to business is doing damage to individuals and families across America. And the sooner we get out from under the oppression, the thumb of progressive government telling us how to live our lives, the better off we'll be. We're watching the numbers drop almost daily now. We're watching the new case numbers fall almost daily now. We're watching the fatality rate fall almost daily. We're on the backside of this. We really are. It has run its course almost completely. And we need to get back to life. We've learned some lessons that we can apply moving forward. We need to get moving. The problem with that is that there are those who don't want us to. There are those in government because they hate our president with a passion which cannot be measured. Those people don't want us to recover because recovery is good for the president. Recovery is good for his re-election chances. And because they won't let him be re-elected, they'll let the country rot. sliding into the final segment of this day's edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Now available in pumpkin spice, by the way. Hey, maybe you've seen this thing popping up on social media. And Chris Rock is quoted as saying the Democrats let COVID-19 come into the U.S. by focusing on impeachment instead of the pandemic. It's true. He had an interview. He said in that interview, rather long interview, that the Democrats did because they were focused on impeachment instead of the danger of a pandemic. They did let COVID-19 come into the U.S. He did say that. But he said much more negative things about Donald Trump than he did about the Democrats. He said a lot of stuff rooted deeply in Trump derangement syndrome. So please, take what Chris Rock said with a grain of salt. He did tell the truth about the Democrats. You really have to be under a rock or wearing a blindfold, ears plugged, la, la, la. Don't talk to me. My mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts. You'd have to be in that category to deny the fact that the Democrats were so focused on impeachment that they shrugged their shoulders at the coronavirus. They were so focused. And somebody probably in a meeting said, yeah, this is a bad situation. We just need to let it go and then blame it all on him. I have no doubt whatsoever that that happened. But please remember, Chris Rock is an anti-Trumper. you just can't even appear to have a brain and deny the facts. And that's where he stands. Speaking of President Trump and making sure that we move forward in a positive manner, there's a guy, there was a man. Yes, I can hear Dave now. A professor of political science who has a rather controversial election model, which has called 5 of the last 6 U.S. presidential elections. This guy says President Trump is going to win this year in a landslide. His name is Helmut Norpoth. He teaches at Stony Brook University. He's giving Trump a 90% chance of being reelected in a landslide. Stony Brook University is in Long Island, New York, and this is what they're saying in a recent press release. Norpoth's primary model, has correctly predicted nearly every presidential election since 1996. It only missed out on George Bush's 2000 victory over Al Gore. When the model is applied to previous elections, Stony Brook says, it correctly predicts an impressive 25 of the last 27. So this guy has found something. He has found a model which accurately has predicted the last handful of elections. And when you apply his principle to the last 27 elections, it has correctly determined the outcome of 25 of the last 27. His track record is solid. Let's just say that. What it does is it utilizes data from presidential primaries to help predict who's going to win. Norpoth said in the press release, "I focus on early primaries and the way the candidates perform in those early contests. It's a very good predictor and a leading indicator of what's going to happen in November." The professor said he was unsurprised at the model's prediction this year, citing Trump's performance in the primaries earlier in the winter. He says, "When I looked at New Hampshire and I saw that Donald Trump got 85% of the votes, I was pretty sure that the model was going to predict, or what the model was going to predict." Joe Biden, on the other hand, pulled down only 8.4% in New Hampshire, a number that's unbelievable for a candidate with any aspirations of being president, says Mr. Norpoth. So this guy's model, which, when applied to the last 27 contests for president, has correctly predicted the outcome, or predicted is not the right word, is it? It has determined the outcome, or accurately stated the outcome, just based on a certain amount of data. It's right 25 out of the last 27 times. And is predicting a landslide for Donald Trump. That's good news. But be aware, that the progressives, the Democrats, know this. They know what's happening in America. Now, they deny it with their mouths. They deny it with their actions. They deny it with everything they do. But they know what's going on in America. They know that our president is much more popular and has a much larger chance than their candidate does. They know there's no way Joe Biden's going to succeed. They know, which is why they're doing everything they can to stack the deck in his favor, which is why they're pushing the vote for mail situation so hard. They're pushing that and vote harvesting because they know that voting by mail and vote harvesting are beneficial to the Democrat cause because they can be manipulated. And they've been doing it. Just look at Orange County, California. Go look it up. They know that the coronavirus plays to their advantage because they can scare people, frighten people into staying home and voting by mail. And when voting by mail, their votes are easily compromised. They know that they can frighten people into staying at home and not going to the polls. And they want to. It's all about winning an election, power and control for these people. All of it. It's a very sad thing. Another very sad thing is just the general reporting of the press. Yesterday at a White House press briefing, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany lacerated the mainstream media for not asking one single question about the historic peace deal President Trump announced Tuesday between Israel and the Arab nations of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. Near the end of the briefing, McEnany was asked about a personal matter and answered, "I'm not going to weigh in on any personal matters, but what I will weigh into is the Middle East peace deal signed yesterday that I did not receive a single question about." That was the first time it's happened in a quarter century. She was referencing the Israel-Jordan peace treaty signed on October 26, 1994. She went on to say, "If Obama and Biden had achieved this, it would look a lot different. You wouldn't have Chuck Todd saying he's uncomfortable with the deal that brings peace between the United Arab Emirates and Israel and Bahrain. You wouldn't have CBS calling it a business deal, and you wouldn't have Nancy Pelosi calling it a distraction. Maybe it's a distraction from her visits to the hair salon. But those were significant agreements. First time in a quarter of a century, three peace deals in 29 days. It took 26 years for the prior two peace deals." She concluded, "The Nobel Peace Prize nomination for the president, two of them, very well deserved." Yeah, Trump has been nominated by a member of the Swedish parliament for his work on the Kosovo and Serbia peace deal, and was also nominated by Christian Tybring-Gjedde, a member of the Norwegian parliament, for his work in securing the peace deal between Israel and the UAE. McEnany's reference to Chuck Todd derived from Chuck Todd saying to White House correspondent Peter Alexander on MSNBC's MTP Daily Tuesday afternoon, shortly after the peace deal was signed, quote, "You know, Peter, this deal is a bit uncomfortable for a lot of observers to watch because it seems so transactional, as if it's pulling out of the Iran deal. It's as if pulling out of the Iran deal is what got these Gulf states on board to do this, you know, than to recognize it. It feels like there's a lot of quid pro quos involved in this, that it isn't something larger than that." Well, unlike President Obama, who coddled the Iranian regime and emboldened it, thus paving the way for friendlier relations between Israel and Arab countries such as Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt, as all four countries are threatened by Iran, President Trump has made no bones about his opposition to the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism in Tehran. McEnany's reference to Pelosi, of course, derived from her statement after the deal was announced. CNN anchor Wolf Blitzer acknowledged, "These are dramatic developments in the Middle East." Then he asked, "How much credit do you give the president for these peace agreements?" And Pelosi responded, "Good for him for having a distraction on a day when the numbers of people who are affected by the numbers of people who are dying from this virus only increases." Wow. Pelosi, true to form, went low, blaming the president of the United States for the deaths of all of these thousands of people, many of whom would not be dead today had progressive governors and mayors of cities across America not been playing politics? There's really not anything else I can say to that. The press and the Democrats, but I repeat myself, hate President Trump more than they love their country. All they care about is their agenda, and it doesn't benefit you. It benefits them. Time to go. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.